Hi, and welcome back to That Other Gaming Podcast, where we take a look behind the scenes of virtual reality, online gaming, streaming, and more. I'm Lisa, a tech comms manager at Meta and recovering academic.
Hello, boss. I'm David, a fellow tech comms manager at Meta, a full-time nerd and lifelong gamer obsessed with the future of video games. What have you been playing this week?
So I have still been playing Telltale Games' Batman series. Excellent. Really enjoying replaying through that. Last night, actually, I was playing that. My daughter was playing Roblox. And then other David, he was playing Sea of Thieves out in the other room. And then I think Michael was watching videos of old school Mario. So dang, all of us were...
That's the dream.
Yes. The family that games together stays together. That's for sure. And then on the mobile front, I've been getting back into Bejeweled recently.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, that's a little match three action.
An oldie but a goodie right there.
It is. It is. It still holds up. How about you? What have you been playing?
I need to play Telltale's Batman, if for no reason other than to get ready for the new movie, because I think that'll get me in the Caped Crusader mood.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one. I've been playing a lot of Horizon Forbidden West.
Nice.
Which is potentially the most beautiful game I've ever seen in my entire life. Just incredible on PS5. Playing that on like a big, nice 4K TV. The performance mode is super, super smooth. It is just a gorgeous, gorgeous game. And Elden Ring is a game that I've been looking forward to for a long time. And it absolutely lives up to the hype. It's so good. So those are the main two for me. I've tried to kind of lighten up on my Zenith addiction a little bit, mm-hmm. if for no reason other than to just kind of pace myself a little more. I'm not quite at end game yet, but there's not a whole lot of stuff to do once you get there yet. So I'm trying mm-hmm. to kind of, limp to the finish line. So that by the time I get there, maybe there will be some more dungeons and stuff. But yeah, those are the main two for me. Just a lot of PS5 time lately.
Very cool. So today's episode is all about rhythm games. Whether in VR or more traditional flat screen gaming, they're some of our not so guilty pleasures.
Yeah, for me, I still shamelessly love Rock Band. I can't hide it. I'm literally, mm-hmm. I can look to my left right here and my drum set is set up. I've got both original drumsticks. I've got multiple plastic guitars. I've got the foot pedal, a ton of microphones. I never bought the keyboard for Rock Band 3. I never got mm-hmm. that one, but I do have everything else, and I definitely love that game. It's probably like the main reason I still have a PS3 that functions is just so I can play Rock Band every now and then.
Wow, that is extremely impressive. My love of Rock Band as well as Guitar Hero is not quite that extensive, but definitely whether as a solo endeavor or as a party game, you really can't go wrong with either one. A lot of fond memories from college and from like earlier in my career, getting together with a group of friends to play, or even just me and my sister at home at our parents' house. Lots of really fun nights with those games.
For sure. For sure. And I'm sure you're a big fan of Rock Band Green Day, because I know you're a big Green Day fan.
Oh, of course. Rock Band and Beat Saber.
Oh yeah. Yeah. The Green Day pack. That's right.
Yeah. And Guitar Hero also. I'm kind of dating myself there, but
oh yeah, I totally remember getting Guitar Hero. I vividly remember it because I was on my way home from an out of town trip to see family, and I begged my mom to let us stop by GameStop on the way home because it had just came mm-hmm. out. And I got the guitar, got the game. I played through every song that night. Just my fingers were like blistered.
Oh, that's awesome. And then also like Dance Dance Revolution brings me back to the Nintendo trackpad days.
Yes, I have a DDR pad still. I've got all the peripherals.
Awesome.
Yeah, I've got it. I've got the, I think DDR Extreme 2, I think, is the one I have on PS2. Classic.
Very nice. Somehow does not surprise me.
Yeah, I'm really excited about our guest this week. We've got Deb Guzman-Barrios and Jan Ilofsky from Beat Games, the studio behind the massively popular and ubiquitous Beat Saber. I feel like everyone that has tried VR has tried Beat Saber.
And if they haven't, they really should.
Yeah.
I sat down with Deb and Jan to talk about how they got into game development originally and what it's been like for them to work on such a wildly popular and influential VR game. Thank you both so much for coming on the show. Really appreciate it. To kick us off, if you could just briefly introduce yourselves and tell us what game you're playing right now.
Hi, everybody. I'm doing good. My name is Deb Guzman Barrios. And right now I've been playing in VR, Beat Saber, of course, because we're in the middle of working on a bunch of cool stuff for it. But also quite a bit of Apex Legends, actually. And I get pretty competitive at it. My family doesn't want to play with me because I go into multiple languages and everything. I'm very passionate about it. I'm not great at it, but I love it.
Hi, Lisa. I'm Jan Ilavsky, and I'm playing Inscription right now. It's a card game, but not as much as a card game. And it came out from Ludum Dare, which is a game jam. And I love when games come out just from 48 hours prototypes. So Inscription, highly recommend it.
So what are your backgrounds and how did you originally get into game design and production?
I have been pretty much a lifelong gamer, born and raised in Puerto Rico, a little Caribbean island, and grew up, you know, going all the way back to the first consoles, had a blast. Growing up, I didn't really feel like there was a gaming scene where I was from. So I ended up actually doing something completely different the first couple of years, which was business and accounting. And then somehow ended up moving over to California, where I found out about Oculus from a couple of friends on a guild on an MMO that I was playing at the time. And I really wanted to be a part of that. So I ended up joining Oculus back in 2015. It wasn't actually in production yet. Mm-hmm. I ended up joining on the customer service side. And the content team found out that I was a total nerd when it comes to games. And they gave me an opportunity to jump over and join the content team. And that's where I first got the opportunity to work with developers like Jan. And that sort of kicked off a relationship, I guess, for the last couple of years that ended up with Beat Games joining the family and with me joining the first party team a little bit more on the production side so that I could get the chance to keep working with these guys. Can't believe it's been almost 4 years. Yeah.
I started programming when I was a kid. I really loved all these like crazy things. So games were something I always wanted to do because, you know, who would like to program a software for a bank? That doesn't sound cool at all. So of course I wanted to make games. So I went to university, studied computer science to actually make games, but I never thought that that would be my career path for some reason. I thought I'm not good enough for that or something like that. So I ended up being a musician for many years. But then when all the ecosystems of the stores where you can sell the games opened, Steam, App Store, and all these other stores, suddenly anyone can just create a game and put it there. And that's when I decided, okay, let's try it. And that's how my programming and gaming career started.
So Deb, you joined Meta, then Facebook back in 2015, and you've worked on a ton of titles before becoming studio manager of Beat Games. Are there any that you'd point to as a personal favorite or anything that really stands out from that time?
Yeah, I mean, I have to say Beat Saber was for sure one of those that stood out to me at the time immediately. Mm-hmm. The first time I ever saw Beat Saber was a YouTube video, and it was a couple of months before the game was supposed to be released. And I just remember finding myself like actually moving my arms to the movement. So I just thought there was something really special about a game that was so intuitive and so easy to understand that it almost needed no introduction. So that was very special for me. Two others that I would say I've just had a lot of fun with would be Red Matter. Mm-hmm. It's a game made by this, you know, tiny studio, very passionate group of folks. It encompassed a lot of the things that I'd always wanted out of a VR title. So it had, you know, a lot of great story. There's a mystery. Audio is great. Music, UI was fantastic. They did a great job sort of incorporating the UI into the actual world as opposed to breaking immersion and taking you out of it, which is one other thing that we always try to look out for when it comes to VR. Mm-hmm. It was so much fun, very self-contained puzzles, objects that looked like you could interact with them. I don't know if this happens to you, Jan, but for me in VR, like, when I see something that looks like I can grab it, I want to be able to grab it. So they just put a lot of attention to that. And it's definitely one of my favorites that I always recommend. And then another favorite would probably be the Room VR. Mm-hmm. I grew up playing all these Room games, a huge fan, love their puzzles, just their world making. So getting to work with the team a little bit when they were bringing that to VR was amazing. And they did a great job of taking what was like very beloved title in 2D on these tablet screens and then moving that into a full 3D space and giving people, you know, just the satisfaction of like pulling a crank feels so good. So those would be some of my favorites.
And Jan, you created Chameleon Run and a bunch of other indie games back before you launched Beat Saber in 2018. What would you point to as the most challenging or interesting title that you worked on in those early days?
Those early days were pretty difficult, by the way. I worked with Vlado, who is co-founder of Git Games, since the beginning. And I somehow managed to make him quit his job and join me and start creating our first game. So we didn't have any money. My wife told me like, okay, you do the game and I will somehow earn money so you can do the games. So it was really interesting. Vlado sometimes lived in my house. He slept there. We worked like from 4 p.m. to 5 a.m. When my wife came, she just gave us dinner and so on. It was really, really interesting times. And after 3 years of struggling, we finalized the game and it was a total failure. We didn't earn any money. So that was a really hard experience. But we learned a lot. That was really important, I guess.
So let's switch gears over to Beat Saber, which, as Deb pointed out, it's a quintessential VR title. It's many people's go-to when they demo VR for friends and family. What do you both think has contributed to its popularity and its longevity?
There's a lot of things which makes Beat Saber kind of popular. But there's one thing I think is the most important, and it's that it makes you feel like a superhero. When you are playing it, you really feel like I'm doing something extraordinary. You feel like you wouldn't be able to do that, and suddenly you are going through really complicated cubes cutting patterns. That's when you really feel all the dopamine coming out. And of course, accessibility. Without that, most of the people won't be able to play it. So that's it, I guess.
Yeah, I think the big plus one, Jan, to feeling like a superhero. I feel like with VR, it's about presence and immersion and making you feel like you have an opportunity to do something you wouldn't be able to do otherwise. And I think that's something that Beat Saber does really well. You're in there immediately. And it's something that in a world where there's so many titles out there that sometimes need like hours of tutorials just to get you started, and the time to fun that it takes for you to just jump into Beat Saber and start having a good time is minimal. And I think that's very huge. And also just a lot of the decisions that went in from the dev team, being able to play to the strengths of the platform itself. Like Jan, I believe, put a lot of thought with the team on this over time to like even like the weight of the controllers and the actual shape of the sabers in the game so that it would feel right, as opposed to like giving you something that looked like it weighed 10 pounds, but it doesn't. Your controllers don't weigh 10 pounds. Just this like pursuit of really immersing the person in the environment. So these sabers, because they're made of light, it kind of almost goes one-to-one with what you expect it to weigh. So that, I think, also adds to the feeling of the satisfaction that you get, but also the haptics and the way that the haptics kick in. And it's like right when you're hitting the cubes, it's just it's this whole like symphony kind of playing of decisions that all, I feel, factored into something that feels so simple and straightforward. But there were so many decisions behind it, so many times that the guys had to like take a step back and not do more because it would have taken it out of that balance that it has.
I love how Deb can describe all my thoughts and she just say it. That's amazing. Thank you, Deb.
Awesome. Deb, you mentioned the community. Beat Saber obviously has a particularly active community. Do either of you have a favorite moment you can share, either from an event or from social media?
It was maybe my second time in US, and we went to Oculus Connect 6. And that was the first time I met a lot of people. But we went to some kind of bar in San Francisco. Some of the people from the community, they showed up there and they recognized me, or someone told them like, he's the guy who created Beat Saber. And they were like totally blown away by that. I remember shaking up hand with some of the guys from the community. He was totally shaking. He couldn't believe that's happening. And that was really a strong moment. I realized that, yeah, we created something very interesting, which people will love. So that was strong.
For me, it was Gamescom. I was walking around one of these, you know, very big halls that they have with Misha, our marketing manager. My favorite moment was we're just walking and talking and somebody stops in their tracks when they spot Misha. And it was because they had seen her from all of her interactions with the community, and they wanted to stop and say hello, and they recognized her right away. So it was so much fun. Misha stopped right there and had a quick chat with them. It was great. They just shared, you know, this excitement for the game. I think that's been something that I've loved too, is just seeing how much fun people are having with this. When we look at on Twitter, people share that they've gotten all sorts of things that are Beat Saber themed, mm-hmm. that they've done to just remember it and just acknowledge how much of a part of their daily lives it's become. So those are always stories that we love to hear, and we're always paying attention and looking at those as well.
So speaking of the community, your latest update included OST5, which is sort of a love letter to the fans. How did you go about selecting the artists and the tracks that were featured?
I'll do my best to speak here on behalf of Yaroslav, who looks after all of our music. For us, it's always about trying to find music that we feel will fit with the beat and the tempo of what we go for with Beat Saber. Mm-hmm. So that's something that we always sort of keep in mind. We also want to make sure that we're branching out and trying new and different things. So with OST5, you get this one new track from Yaroslav, which I'm so excited. I hope you've all had a really good time out there playing it. It really just plays a little bit with different melodies, and we just want to have a lot of fun with it. We also wanted to bring back some of the ones that we know and love. So, you know, Camellia coming back, mm-hmm. very beloved by the community, a huge, huge fan, huge player, Living Tombstone, like just some really great artists. We also see it as an opportunity to maybe work with people that we haven't worked with before, and also help, you know, it's a chance for the community also to be able to discover their music and get to listen to them more as well. So those are some of the things that we try to think about when it comes to the OSTs.
In the latest update, it also introduced Arc and Chain Notes. What went into the design there, and did you encounter any technical challenges along the way?
Community used different kind of patterns to force player to move in different ways long time ago. And we felt like, yeah, they work pretty well, but they don't look as good as I would love to. And we wanted to somehow address that, because we wanted to have ability to players to move in some ways, but we also wanted to keep some kind of standard for visual quality. And that's when the Arcs and Chains idea came to my mind. Or it wasn't just my idea, it was like a group thing. So I started to work with some kind of, we call them sliders in the beginning, and they should just be an extension to the arrows which are on the notes. Mm-hmm. Now you know that you need to cut in the arrow direction, and then something happens. It's pretty standard that if you go up, then sometimes you should go down. And that's a standard which was created for a few years now. If we want to have players to go up, it wasn't possible. But it's a kind of valid movement which might be interesting at some point without cutting another note. And that's what arcs are trying to help us. Arcs are basically extensions to the arrows on the notes. They guide you to the next note, and it can still be the same direction as the first note. And chains are something different. They are just small bursts of notes tightly packed together. And they are mainly used to express very short sounds in the mm-hmm. song. So if there is something like then you can really express it with a slider, like just with a chain. Sorry, I'm completely lost here because we are still using slider internally. Mm-hmm. And just switching to the chains. By the way, Arcs and Chains, these names were selected by the community themselves.
Oh.
Because we first introduced the sliders, and they were like, oh, but we are using sliders for something different, a little bit different. So now there will be a huge confusion in the community. Can you please maybe rename it? So I told them, okay, run a poll and tell me your results, and we will do it. So we just took what they sent, and we have Arcs and Chains now.
Oh, that's great.
When we started working on it, it looked like, okay, this will be a few days work, maybe. Mm-hmm. But suddenly we realized these small things, arcs are not so difficult, but chains actually broke a lot of patterns we had in the game, like scoring system, for example. Before, each of our nodes had a fixed maximum score, and it was really easy to compute maximum score for a level. But suddenly now, these small elements in chains, they have different score. And when you combine it with a multiplier, which we are using there, it stopped making sense. So we had to go and rewrite the whole scoring algorithm, how we are doing it. There was a lot of discussion how we solve it. And fortunately, it looks like we found a solution which works pretty well.
So I'm curious, both as it pertains to Beat Saber, but also games more broadly, what do you think about games as a service and live ops?
I think it's very exciting to be able to bring something to the players that feels like it's, you know, alive, thriving, and also surviving over time, mm-hmm. I guess. Just something that it doesn't feel like you're putting all of your efforts and resources, I guess, into something that's just going to end. I do love the idea. I love playing all sorts of games. Some of these games I've been playing for many years mm-hmm. now. And, you know, with Beat Saber coming up to 4 years now, which is crazy. We're so close to it. I think it's been amazing for us historically to just keep, you know, Jan and the team continuously sort of finding ways to bring quality of life improvements to mm-hmm. the game. As you saw, like Arcs and Chains, this is a huge update that's coming. But it's also been very important. They want to get all this out to the community as easily as possible. So mainly just free updates that continue to provide added value and just new ways to play the game and enjoy it. And then on top of that, on the side, we've been working as well on all of these music packs that also aim to just bring in really exciting new environments and also just artists that you may love. And there might be one artist that doesn't speak to you, but you try it out in the game and then you love it. Or there is an artist that you absolutely love and we bring it in.
And Deb, to your point about music packs, it seems like it's also a really good way to keep the community really vibrant and diverse, that you're constantly bringing in new content and new genres that appeal to different tastes.
For sure. And it's been a challenge in the sense that, you know, a lot of people like assume sometimes that Beat is a very, very big team, mm-hmm. like 100 people or something. And the reality is that we're not that size. The team is growing, which is fantastic. And we've been working on that too. But one of the things that I've always continued to be impressed by is just how much content the team over at Beat Games have been able to continue to push. You could easily like fall into content for the sake of content and then sacrifice quality. But that's something that, you know, that doesn't happen mm-hmm. here. Like the time goes into making sure that things feel right, because it's important to provide the best possible experience for all the players. And we don't want to fall back on that. Like even the Arcs and Chains, like that's gone through a lot of iterations just to make sure that it felt right. This small team is doing both big updates like this, as well as working on music packs that push the bar mm-hmm. on environments and do new things. Like with Billy, like Day and Night, and with BTS, you had the choreo moments and you had the little Tiny Tans flying all over, and just finding new ways to sort of explore what we can do with that world. I always find it very exciting. It always feels like it's a bit of a blank canvas in a way. And you know that at the core of it, it's going to be about the music, but also it's an opportunity, I feel, to really celebrate the artists that we're partnering with in that environment. So that's something that we've also done our best to pay close attention to.
Well, we've covered a lot of ground, but is there anything we didn't touch on or get out there that you really want to express to the fans?
I would like to mention that in OST5, we have a completely new light control system. That's like quite a big thing for me, especially because since the beginning, we had just few lights in the environments, or it might look like we have a lot, but you can turn off only 5 sections. Which was kind of limited. Mm-hmm. And the decision came from a limited amount of time we had for creating those light shows. And I knew that, okay, if we introduce like a lot of lights, it will take us much longer to create levels. And back then I wasn't actually doing all the levels, but I knew that this is not how real concerts look like.
Right.
You know, when you are going to a concert, you have tons of lights all around you. So with OST5, we decided to change that and put 100 of lights there, each controlled separately. So this is a very new thing. We had to change a lot of stuff in the core game to make this happen, to perform well on quests and so on. But now we have a system where you have 100 of lights. Each of them works perfectly together with all of them. And you know, we are still able to create those levels in a very short amount of time because the system, how you control them, is really simple. It's really simple. Cool.
That also took a lot of time, but hopefully for the players, it's all like very easy, very straightforward. They might not even notice, mm-hmm. but at the same time, they'll feel how vibrant the scene feels, how vibrant the environment feels. And I know that our mapping team was very excited about that because that means that they'll have more control over those lights as well. Like with Beat, when it comes to creating these different levels, like they go into every pretty much millisecond of music to try to find placements, and it's all done very, you know, with a lot of love, a lot of care. but we're talking about, like, you know, hundreds, if not thousands, of different moments and events that are very carefully sort of orchestrated to create that very special, very natural feeling environment and map that you're dancing to and you're dancing along to. And that's something that they're very passionate about. So I think it's also exciting to give them a little bit more, I guess, freedom, would you say, Jan, in terms of just the range of more different pieces that they'll have to control.
Exactly. Yeah, that's it.
It's great how, like you said, natural and just seamless and unobtrusive the design all feels, and how it comes together that as a player, you just feel it.
Yeah. Yeah. There's so many stories too. I'm sure Jan still has many more stories that we haven't heard yet, but it's just so easy. I feel from what I've heard a little bit, it can be very easy to add. And sometimes what you need to do is you actually need to restrain and hold back and just be ready to give up on something if it doesn't feel right. But also be willing to listen to what folks are saying, because that's also important, right? They're also trying to help you, like, do the best version of this. So yeah, there's a lot of stories. Well, I'm hoping, looking forward to sharing more of those in the future.
Yeah, we could be here for hours.
And speaking of the future, I think there's some beat news coming out soon, so folks won't have to wait too long to hear something new.
Yeah, please stay tuned, everybody.
Yes. Awesome. Well, thank you so much again. We really appreciate you coming on the show.
Yeah, thank you so much. And thanks to everybody out there for loving Beat Saber and jumping in and sharing all of your stories as well with us on social media. We're always checking them out. So please keep them coming.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for having us here.
I really love getting to chat with Deb and Jan. They both have such interesting backgrounds. Deb, especially, coming from a career in accounting before getting into game development, not something you come across every day, but so awesome that she was able to break into the games industry and really follow her passion.
Absolutely. I'll never forget the first time I played Beat Saber. The line was so long. I think it was at GDC or one of the Oculus early events. I can't remember exactly, but I remember waiting in line for such a long time. And, you know, before it was even in early access, I think $100 Bills was the first song I played. And it was so good. And it's still so good.
Yeah. And I mean, Deb, she was introduced to Beat Saber through YouTube, which, you know, we talk about games that were really built from the ground up for VR. And Beat Saber is definitely one of those. But the fact that even on a 2D platform like YouTube, that the sense of immersion was able to come through for her in a really interesting way. And she found herself kind of dancing along, and just shows how deep those hooks can get.
Yeah, the mixed reality potential for Beat Saber is just so good. Even on TikTok, I still see viral videos for Beat Saber. You know, just the creativity is great.
Okay, and now it's time for Jaloza versus Jagno, where we each get 1 minute to make our case on a chosen topic.
For this episode, let's debate about our favorite rock and roll instruments for music rhythm games. To stay on brand, of course, we'll be debating about which is more fun to play, either guitar or drums. I'll let you go first.
Okay, I'm going to have to go with guitar on this one. Whether you're thinking Guitar Hero, Rock Band, having the whammy bar, and just the sheer joy and rock god aspect of being able to rock out on your plastic peripheral, there's really little that you could compare it to. Even looking into the VR space, while drumming, you've got Smash Drums, you've got Ragnarok, which are amazing experiences. With guitar, you've got unplugged air guitar, so you can still just have that sense of rocking out completely uninhibited using the hand tracking on the Quest platform. There's just nothing like it, and you really need zero real world experience to be able to translate your love of the song into that gaming experience. You just need to follow some color combinations.
I'm going to have to go with drums. And I love guitar just as much as the next person. You know, obviously Guitar Hero was such an influential game for me. But once the drums were added with Rock Band, I think that's where the market really took off, because I think one of the really big selling points is whenever you're playing drums in a group of people on a game like Rock Band or Guitar Hero, the drums are very loud. You can still hear them over the sound of the music because of the hitting of the cymbals and the different drum pads. And it really takes a real sense of rhythm, which I think is, it's a little more difficult probably. I think for most people, I feel like a lot of people gravitate towards guitar because it's something that's a little more commonly, you know, emulated with air guitar and stuff. But playing the drums is really, it requires real rhythm, and it's the closest approximation to actually playing the instrument out of all of them, I think. It really is just very satisfying to really nail the rhythm and keep your whole band on cue and rock on. All right, well, now you know what we think, so it's your turn to tell us what you think. You can head over to our Facebook group or to Twitter to vote on which rhythm game instrument is more fun, either guitar or drums. And don't forget to let us know what you think of the show on Twitter at OtherGamingPod. Over on the Facebook group, we recently asked what are some of your favorite redemption stories in game development, specifically the types of games that were potentially received kind of poorly at first and then made a miraculous recovery through patches, updates, or re-releases. A couple that stick out to me are No Man's Sky and Final Fantasy XIV. Both of those have really, really turned around. And we had some really good answers from other people, too.
Yeah, Elijah B. said, DICE's Battlefront 2 certainly shaped up dramatically as soon as they stopped trying to be Uncharted but multiplayer and instead became the sandbox multiplayer the Battlefront series was once known for.
That's an excellent game. If you're a Star Wars fan, you have to play Battlefront 2 just for the spectacle alone. It's just, it's incredible. Mm-hmm. And Roderick L. said the release of old school RuneScape in 2013 was a really good one because I remember playing RuneScape myself back in the day. And there's a new version of it now, and the game has kind of evolved and changed. And they actually went back and re-released the old version. And so that's kind of an example of going back to your roots, I think.
And David R. shouted out Assassin's Creed Unity. He says, I got it for $8 during a Black Friday sale, but the disc has version 1.0 on it. I played it right out of the case, ran into bugs, then I updated it to the latest version at the time, and it played beautifully. I finished the entire game and its DLC and genuinely enjoyed it.
That's awesome. I've heard good things about that game now. Before we go, I want to drop a live streaming hot tip for all my fellow content creators out there. When you got an active chat while you're streaming, even if no one is commenting very much, you should really make sure that you read back comments and questions quickly when you answer them. For example, if someone asked you, what'd you have for dinner? Instead of just saying, oh, I had steak and potatoes, it's better to say, oh, you're asking what I had for dinner, Lucas? Oh, I had steak and potatoes. The reason for that is twofold. One is that a lot of the time when people watch, they don't have chat on screen. Mm. I know a lot of people minimize chat boxes so that the video footage itself takes up more room on the screen. Or if they're casting from their phone, which my wife does a lot when she is cleaning, she'll cast a stream onto the TV and she can't see chat. Or if you're watching a VOD after the fact, such as a YouTube upload, you might not even have access to chat at all. So it's good to repeat comments and questions as you're answering them, just so that everyone that's watching can stay engaged and understand context, which is, you know, really important, rather than just responding, you know, as the question comes in. A good example of someone that does this is Karkala. She streams on Twitch and she plays pretty much exclusively old school retro JRPGs, which if you know anything about me, that's one of my favorite genres. But she plays through all kinds of them, all the popular ones, obscure ones, fan-made ones, indie ones, all, you know, retro-style JRPGs. And so they're very long streams that take her, you know, weeks to finish. And they're just really good. She's really funny.
Very cool. That's an awesome tip. And it makes so much sense, both, as you said, for people who don't have chat visible or don't have access to the chat. But even just, you think if you're that person at home watching the stream and to hear your favorite streamer, like, call out your handle restate something that you said, like, that level of engagement is just so hard to come by. And it's such a great way to keep people engaged and active in chat. So great, great tip.
Thanks so much for joining us on that Other Gaming Podcast from Meta. Remember that we would love to connect with you on our Facebook group, or you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Other Gaming Pod.
The show is produced by LWC Studios. Cedric Wilson is our lead producer and composed our theme music. Kojin Toshiro also contributed music. That Other Gaming podcast is executive produced by Michael Kirkland and Juleka Lantigua, art by BJ Prima.
Thanks for listening.